Well, they take 5 months. But there is a great pressure to do something, because a previous attempt had failed to write a constitution. George Washington very nearly doesn't go to the convention. You know, Madison has to write him a long correspondence saying, no, this type one really will work. Do come along, you'll need it. I suppose that's the other thing about this convention. The people you would want to be there are there. The people that Americans trust are there, especially Franklin, for example. And critics afterwards say the public's going to go along with this too readily because Washington and Franklin are there. But you know, the people who really wanted to get this document written knew how important it was that Washington was in the chair because he was trusted. There was a sense of crisis.
Well, I was just thinking about to what extent secrecy, what impact that had. I mean, because you know, back then you didn't have the gaggle of press outside. You didn't have to kind of go and update your Facebook page or tweet about what was just discussed and everything. So I think, there are very valuable lessons to be learned, but it's so difficult to translate to this day and age where just information, there's such an immediacy in terms of sharing information. But Dina was saying in terms of, maybe is there a deadline? Because, yes, that took 5 months and that actually is relatively quick, I suppose. Yeah. But they had sort of the benefit of sort of being behind closed doors and not having to constantly update.
And a similar events have to go to as far as Dayton, Ohio, of course, to get some kind of magic circle and secrecy going. And then, yes, Robert Hazel.
I think it's right that it wasn't until the last few weeks that the model of a directly elected president emerged. And I'd like very much your whole schema of studying it in real time without knowing the outcome.
Yeah.
So tell us, how close did America come to becoming a parliamentary system?
Right, so secrecy, lack thereof, how close did we not come?
Well, secrecy is undemocratic. They feel that they can talk more freely if they talk in private, because they are going to say things that they think the American people would not like. Now, if that's a model for today or not, I don't know. Again, I leave this to modern practitioners, but that's one of the emphasis from secrecy. But the other thing about secrecy that I think is more important is that afterwards, they could say what they liked about why they had done things. And so after the event...
That's a very good procedure.
Yes. So after the event, having made a whole series of compromises, with the exception of slavery, the Federalists all present, incompatible in fact, but they all present explanations of why the Constitution is as it is, as if it were a single, coherent, organized text driven by a single set of principles, as opposed to a series of hundreds of compromises. And that is important, I think, for them, how subsequent generations have thought about and fallen in love with the Constitution. Because after the convention, those involved could say it was a philosophically driven, coherent document. And I think that aspect of secrecy I'm more comfortable with, the noble line, aspect, rather than the undemocratic thing.
Yes.
As far as the parliamentary system goes, I'm not even sure it's very clear after the Constitution goes into effect that it might not have parliamentary aspects. Lauriane will tell me I need to define my terms, but it's not very clear that the President is not going to use the Senate as a council. That is a convention that emerges under Washington rather than something that is dictated by the Constitution. So there are actually quite a few ambiguities in the text about how it will operate. If you landed in Washington, D.C. armed only with the text of the Constitution, I don't think you would really understand how American government operates.
Two questions. One is about, you're right to describe them as philosophers, but I wonder what you think about my favorite founding father, which is Benjamin Franklin, sort of an older gentleman sitting there watching these debates, knowing that he may not have a political role. I don't know how much you think it's contributed, and what factor would that individual, the mediator, bring into a process like that? The second question is about your next book. Now that you've done the mapping of that process, are you already seeing, for example, the process of writing the Federalist Papers? Do you feel that this is somehow a way of settling some scores of the debates that took place during the 5 months that summer the Constitution?
That's it. Benjamin Franklin, Federalist Papers, Bernard Bottenhoff.
Well, two questions, really. I wonder if Robert Hazel's question isn't anachronistic to the extent that Britain didn't have an effective system of parliamentary government. The Americans to copy, I mean, if it had happened 60 years later, it might have been different. But I mean, my understanding was the Americans saw George III as an unconstitutional king, and their president was to be a constitutional king. My second point is that the preamble starts, I think, "We the people." To what, I mean, was the constitution ratified by the people in the States?
It was ratified by specially constituted ratifying conventions in the States.
But not by the people in a referendum?
No, indirectly through ratifying conventions. I'm not sure I described them as philosophers, actually. I was careful not to. But Franklin is very elderly at this moment. There's a sad moment in the convention, actually, where he gives a speech to be read out because he's too frail to read it out himself. And it's not really to do with what other people are talking about at that moment, but it's very important that he's there for the legitimacy of the process.
Right, and on this, very, very quick, yes.
My question concerns two people, Charles Beard and Gouverneur Morris. You said consensus since 1915 on the big philosophers come, and then the Gouverneur Morris. My understanding was the actual text of what we read today was put together by Morris afterwards. He's the least known of the possibly important founding fathers.
Gouverneur Morris, good Welsh American, obviously. Yes, Gloria, you want to come back here?
Just two comments. We're thinking of the American process as limited to the Constitutional Convention, and it's not. If you extend it to actual ratification, and maybe even, I mean, it's 3 years, but if you even start with the beginning of the process, which is a year earlier in the Annapolis Convention, it extends to four. Mm. So if you're looking at it as the process itself as a model, the actual writing is a short time, but the process is much longer. And they didn't necessarily have deadlines, but they kept their promises. There was a process outline that was sent to Congress along with the Constitution, and they kept that moving forward. I also want to take issue with Gouverneur Morris being the drafter of the Constitution, and Nicholas knows where I'm going with this, but he was the head of the Committee of Style, Committee of Style, which was the last committee to take the Constitution, and he gave it its current prose form. It was actually James Wilson who wrote the Constitution, so far as we know, as part of the Committee of Detail in their 10-day break between July 26th and August 6th. And because all the documents, with one exception, all 8 of 9 documents from that committee are in his hand, with emendations by John Rutledge, who was the committee chair.
A narrative of the convention that various people have rewritten, but I don't think many people have really challenged, because the broad shape of the narrative is well understood. And what I'm trying to do is something more detailed. I'd like to emphasize, you know, this was a 4-year process. What I'm looking at is how a particular text gets agreed within that process.